Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, what's up? My name is Nolan. I am from Past Gas by Donut Media, the world's number one automotive history show. This week, we're talking about the most famous race in Australia, the Bathurst 1000, the 1,000-kilometer race at the Mount Panorama Circuit. If you know anything about Australian motorsport, even how little, doesn't matter if you know nothing about this race, you probably know about Bathurst. This is the most iconic track down under. It spawned tons of rivalries from Ford versus GM, Peter Brock versus everybody. Everybody versus Nissan, like the list goes on, and we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about the origins of the race, the origins of the track itself. A mayor did some fun corruption and had the track built using Great Depression money. It's crazy. Anyway, check it out. That's Past Gas by Donut Media. Anywhere you get your podcasts, follow the show today. Past Gas. Warning, this episode of Past Gas is not safe for work or kids. I don't recommend that you listen to this episode with your kids.
It's a spooky episode today on Past Gas. It's spooky season.
Sit down, relax, and listen to the story of one of the most notorious cheaters ever in motorsports, Smokey Unick. This is one of my favorite subjects.
You're gonna love this
ever
guy.
I wanted to do this guy on Up to Speed since before Up to Speed.
You're gonna love this guy.
And I'm like so stoked about this guy. I know some of the stories, but we're gonna tell a lot more of that. this guy f-ing rules.
Yeah. Should I just roll into the?
Let's roll in.
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars. It's not about sports.
Hey guys, welcome to the Past Gas Podcast. If you like Past Gas, please help us grow by giving us a good rating and a nice review on the podcast platform of your choice. It'll really help us out, and I really appreciate that. So thank you. All right, now for the show.
Racing is probably my favorite thing in the world. I love watching it, and I love doing it.
I know.
But something you realize the more you progress, James, is that racing isn't all about reaching the finish line before the other guy.
What?
I mean, that's who you want to beat. But of course, there's a bigger obstacle in your way than that guy.
What?
That obstacle, James, is called the rule book.
Ah, the rule book.
Sometimes the fastest drivers aren't the ones with the most skills behind the wheel or the best with the wrench. Sometimes they're the most clever and devious cheaters. Today, we're going to talk about one of the greatest cheaters of all time,
Smokey Unick. Hi, welcome back to Past Gas. We are Donut Media. Well, we are some people who represent Donut Media. I am James Pumphrey.
And I'm Nolan Sykes. Thank you so much for listening to another wonderful episode of our show.
I love doing this.
Oh, sorry.
What was that?
I don't know. That was a noise. Yeah, I love doing this podcast. Again, everyone, thank you so much who's reached out to us and given us nice reviews. I was just reading through a few of them, and I feel so lucky to do this because it's one of my favorite things to do.
And we had recorded a couple of episodes before they came out. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge relief that anybody out there likes them.
Yeah.
So it looks like we get to keep doing them for at least a few more months and hopefully until the day we die.
Totally. Like I just want to like keep improving the show and making it something that I that I want to listen to every time, because, you know, I'm very self-critical. Like, I'll listen to some episodes and be like, oh, I should have said it differently. And I just want
too much self-criticism.
I know,
too.
I mean, but I just want it to be, I want it to be a good show.
Yeah, we always want to grow.
Yeah.
But we should also be proud of ourselves.
Yeah, I'm
you should be proud of yourself.
James, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of me. I'm proud of Christina back there in the corner. You probably won't hear very much, but Felipe's in here shooting video. Love this guy. Colby here in the corner, one of the masterminds behind Up to Speed. Very creative man. Can't see him or hear him, but anyway, I love doing this. So let's just get into it. This is going to be a two-part series on Smokey Unik, the greatest cheater of all time. Yeah, so this episode, we're going to talk about his life leading up to racing, because it is insane.
This is a two-part episode.
Two-parter.
Okay, so the first one we're going to cover, how he got here.
Yes. Yeah, how he got into racing. His life up into racing. Racing primarily is going to be in the next one.
Okay.
But this is worth learning about, because you don't just become the greatest cheater of all time out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You have to have a backstory. You have to be like, it's like the Joker, right?
This is the Joker.
I haven't seen the movie yet. It just came out.
But this episode is like the Joker, and then the next episode is like Batman.
Yes.
Sick.
Yeah. Okay. So
Smokey broke the rules better than anybody. One time he inflated a basketball inside his oversized fuel tank, so when the marshals inspected the fuel capacity, it looked like it was legal. Then he deflated the ball, giving him that much more fuel. And that is one of the tamer examples.
Yeah,
guys,
tame.
Pay attention. But the thing that really made Smokey Smokey was his personality. And to really explain his personality, we have to cover his life before the race cars, including his time spent in both the European and Pacific front during World War II, and how that led him to establishing one of the most famous racing shops in America. Join us as we dive deep into the early life of Smokey Unik in part one of this amazing series.
Our primary source today is The Best Damn Garage in Town, My Life and Adventures, written by none other than the man himself, Smokey Unik.
Dude even wrote his own autobiography.
He wrote his book.
So cool.
Actually, it was mostly his wife, Margie, who typed it all up for him. Apparently, how I imagine the book was written is that he just sat on his couch and just told stories for hours on end, and his wife just tapped them all
down.
That's
amazing. He's like, well, if someone's going to tell my story, might as well be me.
Yeah.
But I got these big old meat hooks in hand, so Margie, grab the computer.
It's over 600 pages long.
Oh, my God.
And it was all, like, it's written in a very, like, stream of conscious way. Mm-hmm. So writing this was a huge pain, because it just jumps all over time and space of Smokey's life. Like, he'll be talking about his childhood, and then next he'll be talking about some woman he was having sex with, and then jump to a race, and then back to his childhood. It's very complicated. Because he was a complicated man, and yes, there will be a lot of sexual relations.
Holy crap. Yeah.
This guy's, he's cool, man.
Dude, he's cool.
The book is out of print, but definitely if you see it at like a used bookstore or something, like pick it up. There's no other book like it. It feels like you're reading a conversation you had with your crazy grandpa, Smokey.
Yeah. It's just crazy that he wrote all this, like dictated all this to his wife, and he's like, and then there's other chick showed up, and she was like down for it too, so I was like, jump on in. We were all soaking wet.
That's how it happened. Smokey is blunt and to the point. In fact, the tagline for this book was,
it's not politically correct or grammatically correct, but then again, neither was Smokey.
And I mean, that's just exactly how the book is. So, let's start from the beginning. Henry Smokey Unik was born in Neshaminy, Pennsylvania, on a 15-acre farm sometime in the 1920s. His mother was a Polish immigrant, and his father was an immigrant from the Ukraine. His childhood home didn't have electricity and never received a phone line. It was heated solely by a large coal-burning stove in the basement. When it was cold outside, all the animals on the farm were brought inside around the stove to keep warm.
I cannot describe the odor of baked goat and rabbit. But let's just say it's bad, brother.
Did you ever have a rabbit growing up?
No, I had friends that had them.
We had a few rabbits. I don't really think they're great pets.
Mm-mm, I could never get over the poops.
The poops.
They just poop all the time.
Little baby poops. Yeah. And that stuff doesn't smell good. That's for sure.
Not a lot of poop does.
No.
Which is something, you know, I've been on this. I've been around the sun a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I have yet to find poop that smells good.
And you can take that to the bank.
You can quote me on that, brother. Smokey was never close with his family, watching him receiving near constant abuse between his mother and father. My mother and father apparently didn't like each other. Their normal weekend was fighting and smashing up furniture. His father was a great believer in beating the hell out of kids to keep them straight.
Cool guy.
Yeah, sounds cool. He did have a little sister, Irene, but they would not be close until much later in life. We lived under the European attitude of control the kids closely, work the out of them, and train them to take care of the elderly.
What?
As Smokey smoothly put it, he and his father weren't really ass buddies. Me and my dad, we ain't ass buddies.
What does that mean?
I don't know. What in the world could that mean? But he's saying it like it's a positive.
Yeah.
He's like, are we ass buddies? Yeah, them, they're just a couple of ass buddies.
Like, does that mean, like, you're such good friends? Like, I would say Felipe is an ass buddy because he's my friend, but also sometimes an ass.
Oh, I was. Felipe definitely is an ass.
But
he's nice about it.
Yeah, but I
doesn't mean they
does
should
that mean
be
such good buddies that they look at each other's buttholes every once in a while?
Does it mean they're such good buddies that they've seen each other's ass?
That's what I think that means.
Yeah, like, we worked out together, we're changing, and then, like, I drop my keys, and I'm like, oh, and you're like, hey. On the good news, now we're asshole buddies.
Looking clean.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be asshole buddies with my dad.
No, I definitely don't want to be asshole buddies with my dad.
On their farm, the only way to plow the field was by using a hand plow attached to a horse. Unfortunately, the eunuch's farm had one of those
big Budweiser horses
named Big Bill. And Big Bill was sort of a jerk. You could say he was an ass buddy. He had two speeds.
He was a real ass buddy.
He had two speeds, and it was either
knock your socks off fast or quicksand slow.
Smokey hated every interaction he had with Big Bill. So he did the reasonable thing. He replaced Bill with a tractor.
You kicked me for the last time, Bill. I told you John Deere just opened up down the road. Well, you had to push it, didn't you? You big old Budweiser horse.
But tractors were an expensive luxury, especially for a family as poor as the eunuchs. So Smokey decided to build one instead. He bought a Dodge with a big engine and transmission for $10 and a Ford truck dually rear end for $5. With a hacksaw, chisel, and other hand-powered tools, Henry Smokey Eunuch took his first stab at inventing and fabrication at the age of 14. Turns out, he was pretty good at it. With his new tractor, he could do the same amount of work in a day that would have taken over 2 weeks to do with Big Bill.
Whoa.
So they shot Big Bill and ate him for dinner. I'm kidding. They didn't do that. Just making sure you're paying attention there, listener.
Now that he could finally make a profit with farming, Smokey decided to invest some of his money in an old Indian Bonneville cheap motorcycle, which he immediately crashed while trying to show off to some girls.
Mm-hmm.
And as we'll see, Smokey Eunuch liked the girls.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of his junior year, Smokey's father died from a heart attack. Smokey was forced to drop out of school, take care of his family by taking his real first job at a Ford dealership. The dealership didn't pay enough, so he also worked nights at Hall's Garage, a small general repair shop.
Despite getting two jobs to make ends meet, Smokey's mom, she decided to take him to court.
Wow, what a
over
woman.
A non-support...
What's a non-support claim?
She claimed that he had failed to provide adequate financial support after his father had died. Keep in mind, he's like 16.
Yeah.
Smokey said, screw that. He packed a bag and his dog in an army motorcycle he won at a farm auction and then took off into the night. He wanted to go to Hercules, Virginia, where they made dynamite.
Did he want to make dynamite?
I think so.
Screw this. I'm going to go make sticks of TNT. You! Come on, Bubba. His little hiatus from life didn't last long, though, and he would soon wind up back in Pennsylvania. Mm. Every job he found, he got fired from, as he absolutely hated having a boss. One day, he saw a Camel cigarette ad that had a famous motorcycle racer, Bob Holloway, on it. He decided, I'm going to be just like that dude, and started trying his hand at motorcycle racing.
He cleaned up that busted Indian chief that he bought a few years ago and took it straight to the racetrack. Turns out he didn't do a very good job cleaning it up because it smoked like hell. And that is how he got the nickname Smokey,
sick,
as he was the one racing the smoking Indian. In his first race, he crashed into another racer head on.
How does that even happen?
I have no idea.
You're going the wrong way.
I know.
This isn't Mario Kart.
And he ended up in the hospital. He didn't have health insurance, so he decided that he was going to quit smoking and stop racing and look at some new career paths because medical bills are expensive, which I found out after I crashed my BMX bike a few months ago and broke my collarbone. I still feel like an idiot. I'm still paying that medical bill off.
Smokey found himself working at a mill machining 90mm anti-aircraft gun barrels. World War II had just begun, and he wanted to participate in the war effort somehow. Though he did try to get out of the jobs as he didn't want to handle the responsibility of handling such an expensive asset, but then decided to make them out of spite as someone told him that the job would be way too much for him to handle. I don't want to do it. Well, you probably can't do it. You say I can't do it, I'll do it. He became one of the best 90mm barrel machinists in the state simply due to his want to spite someone.
Yeah, I kind of relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like someone tells you you can't do something.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
My parents should have employed that back when I was a kid. Like,
yeah.
I bet you can't clean your room, Nolan. I would have been like, show you, Mom.
Show you, Mom. I am very susceptible to reverse psychology.
We'll get back to more past gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
America had just entered World War II, and factories all over were being purchased by the U.S. government and reappropriated towards the war effort. The factory that Smokey had worked in had just begun manufacturing auto gyros for the military.
It's like a helicopter, but it has like an airplane tail.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I saw that movie Fly Away Home.
Oh,
yeah. With the geese.
Yeah.
And I was, I don't know, young.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Mom, I want to build an ultralight. And my mom was like, no, you can't build an airplane. I was like, yeah, I can. That girl in the movie. Dude.
Yeah.
Like, God,
you don't need a pilot's license, Mom.
I also remember like crying because my mom wouldn't get me a monkey.
You cried because of that?
Yeah, I was just like so mad. I was just like, why does she refuse to get me a monkey?
Would you get your child a monkey now?
No. I probably won't even get my kid a dog. That's not true.
Dogs are good. I wanted the only exotic pet I ever wanted was a chameleon,
But I guess those things are like really sensitive. Like you have to, you can't just have like a terrarium and just put them in there. Like they have to, like it has to be a certain humidity in the tank and like really temperature controlled. Mm-hmm. So I just said no.
I might get a snake.
What kind of snake?
Not a cobra. Something cool though.
A cobra would be very dangerous.
Yeah. I just want to get one that eats like mice. Yeah.
Would you just let it like go around the
no,
house?
No, I put it like right when you walk in my front door.
Yeah, yeah.
To the right. I would just put it
okay,
there.
Okay, that'd be cool.
Like light it really cool.
I mean, your house is already kind of a terrarium anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's like a human terrarium.
Yeah.
So you'd walk in and immediately you'd know what I'm all about.
This guy likes snakes.
Yeah. This guy, okay. And his old lady's cool with it.
Yeah. That makes her cooler.
That makes her cooler. These guys are cool.
I love going to your house. It's very cool.
I'll invite you over more.
Yeah.
I'm sure Casey would love that.
Yeah.
I think she would. She would. So anyway, he was making these terrible,
dangerous
helicopters, autogyros. And that sparked an unexpected interest in aviation.
Turns out, boy wants to fly.
Yeah, it turns out I don't belong down here. I belong up there.
With them geese.
Smokey asked his boss for approval to enlist in the Air Force so that he could be a pilot. And surprisingly, his boss was like, yeah, dude, sure.
You have to ask your boss to be in the military? That I don't get
well,
that.
Well, he's already working for the military.
True, but like, if I wanted to join the military, I probably wouldn't ask you for... I mean, I would ask for advice, but I wouldn't be like, I should ask James.
I mean, I think you'd be like, I don't know, maybe you looked up to this guy. I think like maybe you would ask me in a way that's like, hey, man, I think I'm joining the military.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay.
It would be a, should I join the military question, mm-hmm. not a, can I join the military?
Right. And it doesn't sound like it's Smokey's personality to ask if he can do
exactly
anything.
So I don't know. Can but I have the time? Maybe he didn't understand. He's like, hey man, can I have some time off?
Or maybe he's like, you know, I just want to. Or maybe he's like asking not for permission but if it was possible. Like he's like, hey, can I join the military to become a pilot? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, thank you, sir. But Smokey soon realized that there was one small problem with his plan. The dude didn't have a friggin' birth certificate. Because he was backwoods.
Yeah.
But luckily, his boss had just the right connections to get that patched up.
Ooh.
Wow. So,
hey, man.
Already cheating.
Yeah. Hey, I got a birth certificate, guy, if you need one.
But back then, like, it was like writing your name on a piece of toilet paper.
I mean, that's kind of what it is now still, right?
Yeah. Like, it's I was born.
Yeah.
Ah, checks out.
You're here, so yeah, you were born.
Smokey was sent to Philadelphia to meet with a Catholic priest. Within an hour, the priest had created an entirely new birth certificate for Smokey. His birthday went from sometime in May around 1923 to May 25th, 1923. And just like that, Smokey Eunuch was in.
But it wasn't that easy for Smokey to just get in. Just before Christmas, Smokey had an accident at the shop. A tube he was welding had been filled with acetylene by a fellow welder while he was on lunch. Wait.
Was sounds he like trying a, to kill him?
Sounds like a sick prank, dude. Unfortunately for Smokey, his goggles were a little loose, and when that acetylene ignited, the explosion sent hot metal into his left eye, causing temporary blindness. And it turns out the Air Force doesn't have any use for a pilot who is blind in one eye.
Smokey was transferred to the radio division in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to be trained as a radio cadet. He learned how to type in Morse code at a whole 18 words per minute.
Dang.
A few months into his training, he requested a recheck on his vision. The doctors determined that his vision had been slowly returning in his left eye. It was now nearly 20/20 again, but still not good enough to be a pilot. Even today, they won't let you fly if you can't perfectly see the color yellow, the hardest of all colors to see. Anything less perfect than that was unacceptable.
Yeah, so I looked into that, and like, you know, you have your like your cones and rods in your eye.
I didn't know that. I'm not smart.
Oh, well, okay. In your eye, the receptors that allow you to see are called cones and rods and stuff. And if you can't, like, a good indicator of vision is like being able to see colors correctly. Mm-hmm. So like instead of like going through a huge battery of tests to see if you're like, oh, if you have good vision, it's just like, hey, what does this color look like to you?
It's yellow.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yep. There you go. You're passed.
I'm going to go be a pilot. Pilots are the coolest person in the world. And Jesse and I were at the NASCAR championship last year when Joey Logano won, and we were like right by the podium, and the F-18 pilots were standing mm-hmm. next to us that did the flyover, and one looks over to the other, and Joey's like holding this trophy, and the pilot says to the other one, he goes, he didn't fly an F-18 today. And the dude was like, yep.
Yep, that's true.
And I was like, yeah, dude.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like...
As the war raged on and U.S. planes were shot down, the Air Force suddenly became desperate for pilots. Coincidentally, Smokey suddenly became desperate to never work as a radio operator again. So, out of mutual desperation, the doctor allowed him to cheat a little to pass the exam and become a plane driver. Days later, he was sent to Santa Ana, California for pre-flight school, then to Marfa, Texas for advanced flight training. There he discovered that 95% of trainees requested to be fighter pilots, so he got moved over to bombers. He quickly found that in Marfa, Texas in the 1940s, there was absolutely nothing to do except mess with the locals. One of his favorite pastimes was dropping Coke bottles from the cockpit of his bomber near tractors and horses. The bottles would whistle as they fell and sounded exactly like bombs, which would scare the hell out of people.
What a dick.
After 18 months of training in Marfa, Smokey was transferred to Roswell, New Mexico for B-17 training. Then after to Dyersburg, Tennessee, which is right outside of Memphis. Honestly, at this point, you all must get the picture by now. There was a lot of training involved in becoming a pilot. Fun fact, that is still true today, unsurprisingly. The total cost of training an F-22 pilot today is over $10.9 million per pilot. So jeez. Even in World War II, it was in the government's best financial interest to ensure that their pilots had all the training they needed not to die, as losing even a single pilot was a major blow to the war effort.
Dyersburg was different than anywhere else Smokey had been. They did live fire training with all their pilots, having them practice with real ammunition to perfect their aim in combat. They also specifically trained on how to fly in bombing formations.
It's kind of like driving a race car at 200 miles per hour, except race cars are inches apart and weigh 1,500 to 3,500 pounds. But concentration is about the same.
During one formation training, Smokey's appendix burst at 28,000 feet. His co-pilot was too inexperienced and inept to land the plane himself.
God damn it, why'd you give me this kindergartner?
So Smokey was forced to land the plane himself while falling in and out of consciousness and only using the foot pedals. That's insane.
This is all according to him. I believe it, though.
That is true.
I mean, there's a lot of... I don't know. I believe him.
I believe it.
Yeah. During one test flight, he flew over Daytona Beach, the site famous at the time for having set the world's land speed record. He thought it was so beautiful, and someday he planned to live there once the war was over. Turns out, Smokey would say this about a lot of places, primarily because of the women. Because like I said before, Smokey, he liked the ladies.
Throughout the Best Damn Garage in Town book, Smokey shares a lot of information about his sex life, okay? And when I say a lot, I do mean a lot. There's a part in his book, James, where he explains how big his dog Peter was and how... James, he could use it as a tool to arouse women.
Cool.
Cool guy, cool book. In the first 100 pages of this book, at least 70 of them detail having sex with a different person in a different way. Keep in mind, viewers and listeners, his wife helped him write this book.
After his flight over Daytona... It was decided that...
Did I say that was missionary? I'm sorry.
Baby, wait. Read that back. I definitely remember sucking on them.
Oh my God. Write that down.
Write that down. Read it back.
Use that wording exactly.
After his flight over Daytona, it was decided that Smokey would be fighting on the European front. And he was transferred to Marrakesh, Morocco at some point in time.
Remember, there's no dates for this guy.
Yeah. You may have noticed. You may have noticed that there are no dates in this episode, and that's because Smokey is really bad at remembering dates. Once he arrived in
Except for all the times that he had sex different women.
It was about 4:30 p.m., September 26, 1949.
About. Don't quote me on that.
Once he arrived in Marrakesh, some men from the local Foreign Legion taught him the virgin routine. Oh, love me tonight, lady. I never did it before, and tomorrow I may die.
Classic. Works every time.
It works every time.
It's like, so?
A local bartender also taught him enough French for him to master saying, voulez-vous coucher de what avec quoi? Voulez-vous coucher avec toi ce soir? Which means, will you sleep with me tonight? According to Smokey, this approach is not bulletproof, believe it or not. You either get a wee or you get a snap in your snoot. If you got a slap in the snoot, he would respond with a, in that case, I guess just a blowjob is out of the question, in French. As he puts it, I did not master this routine.
This guy, I did not want like a softcore Cinemax adaptation of Smokey Unix book.
All of his life, Smokey had been extremely sexual. His first experience was when he was 12 with his friend's mom. As the friend was standing there, and many more like it, all the way through his early teens. Smokey, he got raped.
Yeah.
Both those kids got raped by that lady.
That's no bueno.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Isn't that, this is a bit off the beaten path for our show, but like there was, I think, a news article last week where some woman teacher got caught for like having sex with a student.
And everyone's like, nice.
Yeah, like, oh man, I wish that was Mike. Yeah. I wish I was in school for that.
There's it's a
like
whole, yeah. What? There's an episode of South Park all about it.
Oh, I haven't seen that
one. Yeah, it's pretty good. Smokey would talk about that experience as if it were something to be admired, but
it's pretty creepy.
It's pretty creepy.
It's very bad.
But Smokey was known for sleeping with about anyone, anywhere, anytime. And we will learn his activity in the war enabled him to go even further with his desires. And he was certainly not the only one. Smokey went so far as to claim that his experiences in so many different countries during the war helped cure any bits of racism he may have had. At this time, he decided to get bolder with his appearance. He had grown a beard and mustache to get what was known as the Jesus look. And decided to shave off his endearingly titled womb broom and beard for the ladies. He called his beard his womb broom.
I don't think it was his beard.
His mustache?
Nope.
His pubes? Oh, he decided to shave off his pubes.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Wait, so he had...
He had the Jesus look on.
A big, long beard and no pubes in like the 40s. This dude just like around Europe being like, hey, I'll f*** you in French. What a
this
guy.
This guy's insane.
He's insane.
Oh, God.
In Marrakesh, our boy Smokey was given his own B-17. Good. And crew to join him. He named his plane and his crew Smokey and his firemen. In the beginning, those firemen weren't very useful. Many air crewmen would blatantly refuse to pull the trigger. Even the most intimidating gunners would be scared shitless of killing someone, even if they were being shot at themselves. Bomber Command air crews suffered one of the highest casualty rates in the war. Out of a total of 125,000 air crew, 57,205 were killed, giving the job a 46% death rate. Wow. Bombers could be facing over 9,800 rounds of flak per minute on a mission, so being fatally shot was almost a literal coin toss.
That's insane. I mean, yeah, because like I think that's why we mentioned earlier that so many people signed up to be fighter pilots, because like if you're a bomber,
you're big and you're slow.
Yeah, you're big and slow. Easy, you're going target into the kill zone. Like that takes balls to do that, man.
Yeah. Like his fellow pilot, Smokey was no stranger to being shot at. During one run, a flak shell exploded near his plane, blowing out the window at 28,000 feet. At that height, the air is roughly negative 65 degrees Fahrenheit. So the entire cockpit immediately iced over. Shrapnel from the shell flew everywhere, even striking his helmet. Suddenly, he felt an intense pain in his lower back. He thought that a hole had been sliced in his jacket from the shrapnel pieces, exposing it to the cold. But it turned out that multiple pieces of burning shrapnel had fallen down the back of his jacket and were burning his skin. But it was too cold for him to discern a difference between temperatures.
That's crazy, man.
So, like the badass that he is, Smokey kept those shrapnel pieces and actually turned them into cufflinks. And he would wear them for the rest of his life each time he had to be put in a penguin suit.
If you have ever read Catch-22, you know all about the dangers of being on a bomber crew. A friend of Smokey was hit from flak from below. It came through the guy's seat and blew his testicles into such terrible shape they had to be removed. That is really bad, to put it lightly. From that day on, Smokey had a 50-pound plate of steel armor under his seat on every mission because he thought
the possibility of life without sex was a fate far more horrible than death. I'm not going to let them Nazis blow off my chingleberries.
At one point in the war, he was deployed to Foggia, Italy, about a 6-hour drive away from Modena, the birthplace of Ferrari. If you haven't listened to those episodes yet, check them out. They're fun. If there was one thing he hated on base, it was the housing situation. He hated sleeping in tents on the ground. So he went to a local quarry, bought some limestone blocks, and built a five-foot-tall house with a tent on the top to act as the roof. He built a space heater out of a 50-gallon drum that used aviation fuel for gas, and even had a 30-gallon water heater and electricity in a hut that he built.
That's so funny.
That's
hey,
sick.
Smokey, what are you up to? Don't worry about it, oh. Build me a hut.
Can I come in?
No, you get over here.
Man, it's cold.
It's called homesteading. I'm going to leave this for my children.
He only stayed in his little custom paradise for a few months. As a miscommunication during one flight resulted in him in accidentally bombing our allies, the Russians.
Sounds like today.
Oof. Topical. After that mistake, he was reassigned to the 1st Emergency Rescue Unit in Naples.
That was probably one of the best things that ever happened to Smokey Unit. Along with rescue, he decided to start pursuing other avenues of income, including becoming an educated poker player and a freelance military photographer. His work as a photographer actually allowed him to meet Mussolini once.
Wow.
Unfortunately for Benito, that meeting was right after he had been hung in town square. I didn't say I got to know him well, but I can tell you that his pecker was not too big. What, dude?
Yep. That's what he asked us, like, meeting, I don't know, one of the more influential people in
dead
World War II
after
history.
Dead. Like, he came across Mussolini's dead body.
Yeah, and all he had to say was that his dick wasn't big.
Because he thinks that's the biggest burn.
That's, yeah.
He's like, he's got a little pecker.
He's dead.
Crazy. But the 10 pictures that he took of Mussolini became his best-selling pictures of all time.
After Mussolini was killed, Smokey was transferred yet again, this time to Dum Dum Airfield in Calcutta, India. Majority of his work involved dropping Higgins boats into the ocean from his B-17. Unfortunately, Calcutta isn't really filled with oceans, so he had a lot of free time, which is great for a enterprising freelancer such as Smokey Unik. As it turns out, the CNAC, or Chinese National Air Carriers in Calcutta, they needed more cargo space to fly stuff from Dum Dum to Liludang, China. It was flying a route known as the Hump. It was an extraordinarily famous and very dangerous route that went over the eastern Himalayan mountains. And to Smokey's benefit, he happened to have one of the only B-17s in India at the time. So, naturally, he started a freight service.
This wasn't his B-17.
No, it's the military's.
It's the military's. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to use this old bird to start a freight company.
Yeah, like, I mean, at that time, being deployed in India, like, I'm sure that they didn't have a lot of communications with command.
Right.
Like, they're kind of pretty much free to do. I mean, they were free to do whatever they want, as we'll see right now. Yeah. The CNAC would burn the contents of mailbags going into China and then refill the bags with the cargo. So he would transport the bags filled with snakes and animal skins, carved ivory objects, jade, precious gems, money, gold, and silver. So just to reiterate, the mail going into China, they would burn that.
Yeah.
And then bring cool shit
back. Did you get my letters?
No, but I got this dope jade tiger. Did it bother him that he was... Did it bother him regarding the obvious fact that what he was doing was illegal?
Hell no. I figured I was doing this on my own time, and our government knew about it.
The government would approve the transport missions, and they didn't really care what was in it. The smuggled cargo would net Smokey a couple grand per run. How do they approve this?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, man. Yeah, sure.
Hey, man, can I go fly to China?
I want to practice.
I guess.
I want to practice.
Okay.
I want to stay on my toes, you know.
Yeah. All right, just get out of my office.
At this point, he figured out another way to make money. His policy was to take it a day at a time, keep alive and comfortable, figure out ways to make a buck, and try and do the above the easiest way possible. That's pretty sweet. It's like pretty cool. He would buy Japanese and American war memorabilia and sell them to tourists and visiting politicians. When it came to bomber jackets, I could buy 100 of them for $10 a piece. And in the right place, 100 to 200 each was like falling off a log. He did this for a little while until he was once again transferred to Okinawa.
Almost as soon as he stepped foot into Okinawa, the war ended. And he had served enough missions to be eligible for discharge. But at this point, he planned to stay for his full 20-year service. That was until he found out what his next assignment would be. He was going to be sent to fly coal inside war-torn Germany. And he didn't like that idea. It's just very inefficient to fly coal around. He was not nice about this idea in his book. So he decided to
pull the biggest mistake of my life, and I resigned.
In 1948, Smokey packed his things and left the Air Force, heading for Daytona Beach. He left with $135,000 in a can.
What?
Yep. A wristwatch. Yeah, dude. Yeah, that's crazy, right?
I'm going to Daytona Beach.
I got a can of money. A wristwatch with a band made of the stainless steel from a crashed Japanese Zero fighter, and his leather bomber jacket. The jacket and watch he left in a gas station a year later after a race was over.
Take my word for this. I truly hated the radicals who plunged us into the misery, terror, pain, death, destruction, and starvation worldwide. Whoever got my watch and jacket, you stole my only last possessions that I thought I needed. They were my secret badge of manhood. But on the other hand, maybe you did me a favor. I needed to get rid of all yesterdays and try to look at life a lot longer than a day at a time. Sure enough, I didn't really need him.
It's a very, like, external view of his life
right.
for a guy like him.
It's you know? Very well put, too.
He's very, like, this guy's a scoundrel, yeah. but also, like, a monk. It's yeah, crazy.
He's like a poet.
So cool. After a failed career at a Ford dealership and as a night pilot with Eastern Airlines, he discovered that he
couldn't work for anybody and would start a business, so I started doing the only thing I knew how to. Fixing cars and trucks and trailer parks and gas stations.
His newly married wife had forbidden him from driving, so he decided to take the easy way and build race cars for others. He had buried his money, literally, so he was starting off in relative poverty.
While working on race car, he buried his money?
I guess so.
And, like, lost it?
I guess.
Oh, God.
This guy's a nut.
I know it's around here somewhere. Oh, God, Smokey, why didn't you use a damn bank?
You know how often I, like, fantasize about finding just a big, not even, like, a big bag of money?
I would not keep it.
No?
Haven't you ever seen a movie?
Yeah, I saw millions.
Yeah, if you find money, Don't keep it. Just leave it where it is.
Mm. What about like $100?
Like, have you seen No Country for Old Men?
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Okay. That's a good one.
Do not take the money. Leave the money, man.
While working on race cars in Daytona, he met Bill France, the founder of NASCAR. Through Bill France, Smokey met one Harry Neal, a man who allowed Smokey to rent out half of Neal's blacksmith shop to use as a garage in exchange for some occasional labor. After working in Neal's shop for about 6 months, he had saved up about $400 and was ready to find a place of his own. Dang. I wish we could find a place of our own for $400 here in L.A. A shop that would be known as Smokey's. Soon enough, after some smooth negotiation, he had a small tin garage on a riverfront lot that Smokey could call his own.
That sounds like a really nice, tranquil situation. Just like, I've made it. I'm on a waterfront property in a garage. This is my dream. Time to do everything by the book, right?
Right.
I'm not going to cheat anymore.
Nope.
I'm not going to change anything up anymore. Not. Yeah, right. I'm Smokey Unit. And that's what we're going to talk about on next week's episode, part two of Smokey Unit.
Yeah, we're going to get into all the cheating, all the cleverness.
Deceit. This guy, if you thought this episode was kind of crazy and his early life was kind of crazy, we haven't even gotten started
yet. Follow James on Twitter and Instagram at James Pumphrey. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes.
Follow Donut at Donut Media.
Yeah, we make videos too.
Yeah, and check us out on YouTube. We have a bunch of videos coming out almost every day. If you like cars, come be cards with us. All right, I love you.
Bye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.